Hello and welcome, South Carolina, from the Midlands to the Upstate. We are happy to have you join the Yard Pros Show today. I am Mills Grant, one of your hosts.
And I'm Scott Beard.
And this is brought to you by Carolina Fresh Farms. It's very simple, folks. If you'd like to find Carolina Fresh Farms during the week, pretty easy, wouldn't you say, Scott? www.carolinafreshfarms.com. Wow. That was a mouthful.
That was.
Yeah, I went through that pretty quick, didn't I?
You did.
Wow, what are we going to do for the next
55 minutes?
Yeah. What do you think?
Well, no, you got a lot of paper over there.
I don't have much paper, man. I don't have much. So the purpose of the Yard Pro Show, our intent is to deliver some information, share a little bit of knowledge about your lawn, about your landscape. It's very simple. The format is easy. It makes it a lot of fun for us. We rely on call-ins and text. You can give us a call today at 1-800-347-1063. That is 800-347-1063. And as always, you can text us at 71307. We'd love to hear from you, love to discuss some of the issues, maybe some successes, maybe some failures, you name it, that's going on in your lawn, in your landscape. Makes it much more interesting. Or we could go into a dissertation of nitrogen sources and how they affect plant growth. Why are you shaking your head no?
Oh, just you're stretching my neck.
Stretching your neck? Mm-hmm. Is that what it is?
Yep.
So, Scott, to kick it off, let's talk about current things. What's going on? Weather. It's hot. Oh, it's hot. It's humid.
And muggy.
And muggy. Man, the humidity is there. It's hot. It's humid. Things are growing.
Unless it's thunderstorms,
cool season things, yes. But all the warm season things, the grasses, the shrubbery, you know, the perennials, the annuals, everything's growing. Occasional thunderstorms. You know, oddly enough, how about that drought report? Oh, here it is, Scott. You want to describe it? What is it?
Wow.
Can you believe that?
Zero.
As of June the 19th.
So now you can print this off and you have a little coloring chart.
It's another coloring page. If you'd like to visit, you can simply Google U.S. Drought Monitor South Carolina and you can print your own coloring page. You can color the counties any color you'd like to color them. Right?
That would be good.
Because guess what, folks? The USDA and the Drought Department have not colored them this week. Because
compared to last year.
Believe it or not, you know, it's really interesting compared to last year because it has those statistics on here. 1 year ago, we were 99.9% drought-free. Today, we're 100% drought-free. So almost identical.
I was sitting there trying to think when that drought hit in last year.
Well, here's the interesting thing. 3 months ago, 70% of the state of South Carolina was under drought. It's a little messed up, right? That was back towards late winter, early spring. 70% of the state in drought. Here we are. Few days after the first day of summer, the summer solstice, longest day of the year.
Longest day of the year.
Right? Summer has officially begun. And
we are drought free.
It's a good place to be.
It is.
Now, let's talk about this in a month and see where we are.
And in August.
And in August. And again in September. But right now we're drought free, which is great. So, hey, we got a text question. Can you believe that, Scott? We'll see if we can string this one out for about 50 minutes left in the show. Is it too late to plant Bermuda seed?
No.
Absolutely not.
Season's just upon us.
It's here now. You know, we got ample soil moisture, ample soil temperature, okay, nice and high.
Definitely have the soil temperature.
You know, we got to have warm soil temperatures to get the seed germinate as quickly as possible. We have to have moisture. Now's a great time to do it. You know, if it's a new seed bed, it's pretty simple. Prepare it, seed it. Put some type of evaporative control item. How do you like that? That's pretty technical.
Steep?
Mulch. Not hardwood mulch,
right.
But you know, something to help with the slow down the evaporation of water during the day. Because yesterday was extremely, extremely windy, at least in the upstate. Mm-hmm. I didn't travel much out of the upstate because I had been all over the mountainous region of Georgia for the prior 3-4 days, left Monday for northwest Georgia, wound up in northeast Georgia on Thursday and home on Friday. Wind, you know, after we got that first little front that came through with little threat of rain through the upstate, and not sure the Midlands really got a whole lot out of it, but, you know, yesterday morning was rather crisp, I would say. It wasn't muggy. It wasn't a fall morning, but it was in the low 70s. Humidity was down a little bit. The wind was picking up. It blew about all day. When the wind's blowing and you got these little seeds sitting there, and then hopefully within a week to 10 days you have seedlings, we really have to watch the water. The water is the crucial thing. It's the same thing, you know, this week, the traveling, the purpose of my traveling was sprigging golf greens with Tiff Eagle. Yeah, that was fun. 3 days in a row of handshaking sprigs on golf greens.
Don't ever volunteer.
Yeah. Yeah, so a lot of fun with the crew because a lot of the guys on the crew were in the low 20s age-wise. I'm twice their age. So I had a lot of fun poking fun at them and say, hey, you know, I'm twice your age and I'm shaking sprigs around you. You know, we just seal them off, shake sprigs behind them, put them in the circle of shame, as we call it. So they're just standing in this open area, put them in the circle of shame. You know, so it's the same thing with the sprigs. You know, if you've ever seen the sprigging process, the number one element to making things grow when it's young like that, whether it's seed, whether it's sprigs, whether it's sod, is water. Water, water, and water. Now, we can also have too much water, right?
Mm-hmm.
Seen that happen plenty of times. But right now, with the wind blowing, even though the humidity's high, the wind starts kicking up, it's 90, 95 degrees during the day, water becomes crucial, especially from, let's say, noon till about 5 or 6 o'clock in the evening. Water becomes crucial because you can't let the sprigs, you can't let that seedling, if you planted that Bermuda seed, you can't let that seedling dry out. If it dries out one time, 80, 90% of the time, it's death of the plant. There's no getting it back. There's not enough root system there. It's not mature enough. There's no getting it back. It's gone. So you have to do short runs of water, time-wise, but more frequent intervals. You know, on the average golf green, after we sprig, and this is good information for those that are seeding, we're talking 5 to 6 to 7 minutes on the hour, every hour, during the hottest time of the day when the wind's blowing. You know, earlier in the morning, prior to the noon, you want to crank it up in the morning, you probably want to water maybe every hour and a half, the same time frame. But by the time we get to afternoon, we want to be every hour. And by the time the sun begins to set around 7:30, 8 o'clock in the evening, if you have the moisture built up, you may even want to think about, like on most golf courses, what they do is probably not even water. If they do water, it may be one time, twice during the middle of the night. Try not to water. Why? I'm asking you, Scott, because no one's called us, so I have to ask you.
I was sitting there looking at the phone.
It's just you and I and a couple of texters we're going to get to in a second, right? So why? Because keeping prolonged wetness will lead to more disease, okay? Now, running your irrigation 3 times a week at 3 a.m. in the morning, because if you got to have a longer cycle to get around and let everything run before you get up at 7 a.m. and you don't want it to affect your water pressure in the house. If you want to start your irrigation at 3, 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock in the morning while the sun's still down and hasn't come up, yes, that does prolong leaf wetness, but it's not a 24-hour leaf wetness, okay? So the terminology we use in the golf industry, we let it dry down at night, drying down. So drying down would be from the top down. So we want those top leaves. We know the surface is moist, but we want those top leaves, the moisture to leave them so that we don't have excessive moisture 24-hour period, because that is going to lead to more disease. Okay, we can take the same concept and we use it in managing water within our landscape, whether it's a new seed like this Bermuda or whether it's a established lawn. You know, how about wilt? We'll get into that. We'll talk a little bit more, I think, this morning about water if we don't get some phone calls. Proper ways to water. And we may not get phone calls. I have a feeling most people listening, Scott, would really like to learn more or understand more about how to become more efficient at utilizing water within the landscape. And let's talk about some aerification today.
Okay.
It's that time, don't you think?
It is.
It's that time to aerify. But, Scott, we're going to go, before we go to the text, we're going to beg for some phone calls, right?
Please.
You want to give them the number? Mm. Do you know it?
I don't have my glasses
on. He doesn't have his glasses on. 1-800. That's 1-800-347-1063.
See, you had to double take.
Yeah, well, I'm trying to slow it up. 1-800-347-1063. Still no phone calls. Amazing. But we'll go to the text line.
Boom.
What do you say?
There you go.
Back to the text line. Hey, guys. How successful and cost-effective is hydroseeding centipede seed? Cost-effective, pretty good. I mean, it's certainly cheaper than sod. Mm-hmm. Okay? Now, from the initial cost perspective, very good. Certainly a lot cheaper than sod. Now, the issue I have with hydroseeding, there's a couple things going on. If you're not familiar with hydroseeding, you take a vat, okay? It's got a paddle wheel in it. You dump seed in. You dump fertilizer in. Then you dump cellulose fiber, wood fibers. Could be paper fibers. You dump some type of fiber into this machine. You fill it full of water. The paddles churn it, and you make a slurry. And then you got this nice pump that shoots it at the end of a hose. So you direct it where you want it. Centipede seed, Bermuda seed, things of that nature that are small seeded. I find that you're much more successful if you will pre-seed onto the bare soil with your seed, then come back and cap it with your hydro mulch. Why would I say that, Scott?
That way you get exact uniform coverage.
Yeah, and see, I'm putting you on the spot today, right?
You are.
It's the quiz. It is the Yard Pros quiz. All right? So here's the issue. When we apply the slurry, it's going to be at least a quarter inch thick. How many of those seeds are going to be in
actually
that?
Actually,
it's uniformly mixed in that mix. Mm-hmm. So when you apply the mix to the soil, it's a quarter inch thick. Are all those seeds going to find their way to the dirt? Probably not, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I find if you do some pre-seeding first, you put a little extra seed into the slurry, and then you cap it with the slurry, you're much more successful. You have more seed-to-soil contact. That's the key. Seed-to-soil contact. Hydroseeding can work very well, but it is not foolproof. Just because you hydroseed it, don't think that, hey, I can hydroseed it and I'm not going to irrigate it and it's going to grow. It doesn't work that way, right? We still have to irrigate it the same. We have to fertilize it to grow it in, and we still have time to grow it in. If you hydroseed a centipede today anywhere in the state of South Carolina, I think you would have about a 90 to 99% grown-in lawn by the end of the summer. If you sodded centipede today, you would have a fully grown in established lawn in about 3 weeks. And I know a lot of folks are going, what do you mean? It's sod. It's established the day you lay it. No, it's not. It's not carpet. Okay? It has to root. It has to knit together. It has to tie together. It has to fill in the seams. That's going to take 3 or 4 weeks before you get really good roots in there where you feel comfortable and you can start trimming the water back. So we're looking at 4 weeks versus about 12 weeks. So a third of time if we sod to have 100% establishment. And I don't even know, I don't consider anything seeded first year 100% establishment, okay? So you're almost looking for an entire growing season if you seed something to get 100% establishment. Not an entire year, but an entire growing season. So it is cost-effective. It is acceptable. But take those little tips and learn from them and see if it makes it good for you. So, Scott, I say we go to the phone lines. We have begged, and they have called. We have Daryl in I thought it said Lawrence there, but it's Lake Murray about sod. Good morning, Daryl, and welcome to the Yard Pro Show.
Yes, good morning. How are you?
Great.
Good. It's interesting I heard you guys on the way home from work this morning. I have a yard that I've had problems with for maybe 8 years. I live on the Lexington side of Lake Murray, nice gentle slope. And when I sodded my yard 23 years ago, had great sod for years and years and years. I do have a large oak that grows off to the side. And anyway, to get to my problem, I have maybe a third of my yard I have something that they call signal grass that comes every year. And it will grow, and I've round-upped it before and killed it and tilled it and then killed it, and I've planted more centipede there before, and it comes back. I have done that again and have been advised to put down the wide-blade zoysia, and I did that. And it grows through the summer, and then it dies in the winter, and then the signal grass comes back. So in my backyard right now, I have a beautiful area of centipede to the left side that's probably, I don't know, maybe 40 by 50. And then over on the other side of the yard, I've got a big area of signal grass. I've got some Bermuda grass. I've got some centipede. And then I've got some bare area that's probably under the drip line of the oak. So I don't know. We have a geese problem on this side of the water. And we have, I've got the oak tree. And then that area, I have water that comes down off the driveway, which we've done gazillions of things to try to make it where I don't have water riding through there. Anyway, so I'm at the point where I either need to hardscape it or figure out a way to, anyway, I'm kind of at a loss. I don't know exactly. I'm just putting good money after bad every year.
Gotcha. The signal grass, or not the signal grass, let's talk first about your maintenance of the lawn itself. Are you using pre-emergence every spring, or?
Yeah, I have a commercial company that does the pre-emergence, and, you know, they come out 6 or 7 times a year. Okay. And I've used multiple ones, and the guys that I use seem pretty intelligent.
Okay. Scott, what are your thoughts?
I think I was going the same way you were with pre-emergent.
You know, I just I know pre-emergent.
So one more piece of the puzzle.
Yeah.
I do get I have had a little bit of fungus that comes up in the spring.
Mm-hmm.
And I've used Pillar G on that, and that's controlled it well. And the guy with the company that I use, he said, well, that puts your grass, you've got weak areas, and that allows that signal grass to make a comeback.
It does, but if you're choosing the proper pre-emergent, that should help with the signal grass. Now, signal grass has become a major issue in states that are more southern than we are, you know, down through South Georgia, Florida. And I was looking very quickly. I didn't see off the top of my head. I'm not sure. I know there's a good product out there for post-emergent control for signal grass that seems to be doing fairly well. It's called Tribute Total, but I was looking because I don't know off the top of my head if it is labeled for centipede. Because how much of the lawn is still centipede versus zoysia?
The zoysia's gone. I mean, there's a little bit of it mixed in.
Uh-huh.
I probably have re-centipeded maybe 5 times, zoysia'd one time, and actually went to another area.
Yeah.
And they suggested I put St. Augustine. So, I mean, we are talking about patchwork yard here.
Yeah, and I think, you know, what you're going to have to do is to figure out and maybe go back and do a little bit of research of what pre-emergents are best to control signal grass and make sure that the lawn care company is putting down the proper pre-emergent at the proper rate. Because pre-emergent will help control this and do a pretty good job at it. Post-emergently wise, mm-hmm. You know, there are other things out there other than Tribute Total. There's cethoxidin. I believe that's the old post product, like if you had centipede, that it would work. And it's still out there.
What's the name of that one?
I believe cethoxidin. Hold on. I believe I think the trade name, the chemical name is cethoxydin.
Mm-hmm.
If you can find that active ingredient on your centipede areas, that will work. The problem you're going to run into as well, you're going to have to find that product post-emergently that is safe on a very broad spectrum of grasses because you have different grasses within the landscape.
Right.
And you know, the thing with that weed, yes, spraying the Roundup to things of that nature kills it, but when we're dealing with a weed that also germinates from seed, Roundup is not going to kill the seed. Okay? Roundup is not a soil right. sterilant. It only is going to kill things that are actively growing. So you still have this bank of seeds, and then when you till that area, you're bringing up more bank of that seed. into that area. Then you go to resod it. Well, what do we need to make seed germinate? We were talking about it in the earlier part of the show, is we need what? We got to have water. So when you sod, you're naturally got to go out there and put a lot of water out. So guess what? The weed seeds are going to begin to germinate.
I think what he suggests, because what I suggested, well, let's do this next spring. And he said, no, you want to do this kind of like what you're saying is, let's do this early while that stuff is still germinating, because otherwise it's going to come back.
Yeah.
You know, because I was thinking we'd do it before next year, before the grass starts growing.
Yeah, you need to get
to get it while it's germinating.
No, you need to get a pre-emergent out before it germinates. And just because you do it one year and get control doesn't mean the next year you don't need to do it. You need to get your pre-emergents out early every year to help control this weed.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
Okay.
Let me ask you. So who, and I don't know this either, and I've thought about golf experts. Who are the people that are the experts that can help me with that type of pre-emergent? Because I go to WP Law, I go to places like that, and they're good.
Yeah.
Nobody that I've been able to talk to is an expert.
I mean,
your local extension agent.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you got the Clemson Extension agents. You can talk with them. You can also visit HGIC. If you Google that's the Home Garden Information Center through Clemson University. Mm-hmm. You can go to their database, and I'm not certain, but I would imagine they have some information about signal grass and control of signal grass on their website.
Okay, you had time for one more second?
I'm about out of time. I'm down to about 40 seconds. So.
Okay. Can you grow grass underneath a big oak tree, or do I need to lose an oak tree?
It's going to be difficult. You're going to be fighting water more than anything. You could do it, but you really have to manage the water. That's going to be your issue.
Got it.
All right?
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Darryl. Have a great weekend. Bye-bye. Folks, you are listening to the Yard Pro Show, brought to you by Carolina Fresh Farms. I do apologize for those of you who are on hold. You will have to hold through the bottom of the hour break, but we will be right back. You can give us a call during the break at 1-800-347-1063 or text us at 71307. Stay tuned, folks. We'll be right back. Hello and welcome back, all you listeners there in the state of South Carolina, to the Yard Pro Show, brought to you by Carolina Fresh Farms. I am Mills Grant.
And I'm Scott Beard.
And I'm tired, Scott.
You have done nothing in 2 weeks. I know why you're tired.
It's been a long couple of weeks kicking off the summer. Here we are. We are a few days into the official summer, just past the longest day of the year, and it's great. No drought, pop-up thunderstorms. Right?
Mm-hmm.
But we've got heat, we've got humidity, we've got bugs, we've got diseases, we got all kind of things going on, wouldn't you say? Most importantly, we have someone on hold, and they found us at 1-800-347-1063. Phone lines are open. We'd love to hear from you. And as always, please give us a text at 71307. Let's go to Jerry in Greer. Good morning, Jerry, and welcome to the Yard Pro Show.
Good morning. My question concerns a yard I moved into, a new subdivision. It's going into its second summer. The developer put in Bermuda grass, and it's kind of pathetic. I came from a home in another area of Greenville that had a gorgeous zoysia lawn. So my question is, what could I do if I really wanted to try to get a great Bermuda grass lawn, or what are my options to replace it with another grass that would give a much better appearing lawn?
Well, let's see. Let's tackle first, let's replace it, because after all, we're in the sod business, Jerry, and we're all about just selling grass, right? No, we're not.
Right.
No, we're not, Jerry. You have Bermuda. It was sodded, correct?
Yes, it was. I think it was, but it's not very thick.
Okay. Normally what happens, and it's always been mind-boggling to me, that when we see, and for lack of better terminology, we see the track homes, and I hate that term. It's really more the speculation homes, where the subdivisions where they build a house in the anticipation of someone buying the house. I think that's a better way of describing it. But what we see in that industry, because they are building more homes. Normally in that industry, everybody looks for the cheapest way out. Bermuda sod is the cheapest. Okay, if you call not just us as a sod grower, you call any other sod grower, typically the cheapest sod that I know of is going to be Bermuda grass. Reason being, it grows fast. Okay, it's all about turns. We're manufacturers. The quicker we can turn the product, the cheaper we can sell it for. So, and it is a commodity. And you always joke about that. It's not a publicly traded commodity, but in terms of the sod industry, Bermuda grass is a commodity. So the market kind of dictates the price as well. So that's why they go with Bermuda grass. Here's the funny thing about it. Bermuda grass requires more inputs as far as fertility and management than about any other grass they could put in those lawns. And it doesn't make sense to me. I'm speculating. I'm building a house in speculation somebody's going to buy it. So I want my neighborhood. A lot of times these builders are in the neighborhoods long term, 2, 3, 4, 5 years to build them out. My goal, if I were marketing, would be, hey, I want the prettiest lawns I can have and the easiest lawns to maintain because I can sell more houses. People want to live here if the lawns look pretty, right, Jerry?
That's right.
You know? So they use Bermuda. The unfortunate thing is, it's inexpensive, so it keeps the cost of the home down. The unfortunate thing is, if you're not maintaining it, then it doesn't look real pretty, and that's why you're calling us. So the good thing is, I can tell you, and we at Carolina Fresh Farms can tell you and teach you how to maintain that Bermuda to the same level that a golf course maintains it. After all, 99% of all golf courses in this community, if not, well, I'd say 99% in this community, because there are a few that are Zoysia fairways and one that's bent grass. But 99% of all golf courses you play, their Bermuda is gorgeous right now, right? Have you noticed that? Well, you know why? Because they fertilize it, they nurture it, they maintain it, okay? So if you get on a really good fertilizer program, the other thing I will tell you is make sure you're mowing it at the appropriate height, which should be 2 inches or less, in my opinion, on 419 hybrid Bermuda, because if it was sodded, I'm 99.9% certain that you have hybrid Bermuda grass, okay? But if you get on a good fertility program, there's no doubt in my mind that that lawn is going to look gorgeous. Now, I will tell you this, 419 Bermuda is not the prettiest grass. I mean, or not the pretty, it's a gorgeous grass, but it's going to take a little bit of time to get it growing. You're going to have to maintain it. It's not the most drought-tolerant grass, so you're going to have to irrigate it as we get drier. Right now we're getting enough rain, but it's because it's not extremely drought-tolerant or resistant, it'll tolerate drought because it'll come back after drought, but it's not resistant to the heat and the drought because it's going to wilt fairly quickly. So if you get these dry spots in the yard, they're going to wilt out. If you got compacted soil, that's going to wilt before anything else. But I really feel like if you fertilize it, if you aerify it this year, you get on a good fertility, a good pre-emergent program, and you're willing to maintain it, keep it mowed every week, you put the ample amount of water to it, you're going to have a gorgeous lawn. There's not a much more beautiful lawn than a really good 419 Bermuda lawn. Color's impeccable. You know, it's just a great grass all around.
Okay. Dirt is very compacted, and yep. I did have it aerated about a week ago. Would it help the lawn if it were aerated, you know, 2 or 3 times this summer?
Yes, it would. When you said you had it aerated a week ago, I would probably aerate it again in another week or two. And get a you're that compacted, I would get a couple of aerifications in, but I would not do an aerification after about second or third week of August, because we want time for that lawn to heal up. But we want to aerify, and when they're there aerifying it, don't aerify it just one direction. Don't aerify it two directions. If it's that compacted, aerify it 5 or 6 different directions, and then put the water to it beforehand, and make sure when you open up that lawn, we're going to begin to get dry. We're definitely hot. If that lawn is what we called opened up and we have all those holes kind of exposed, we want to make sure we're irrigating for a week or two afterwards as well. Okay?
Okay. Yeah, I do have a sprinkler system. Does it help to put sand on the lawn after the aeration?
It certainly can. If you can, it's a process we call top dressing. You could aerify it, top dress it, and then drag that sand around in the lawn. We want to make sure it's well fertilized right before you do this, and it will cover that, you know, grow back through that sand. Now, we don't want to cover it where we cover all of the leaf blades. So we want to put sand out. We want then want to drag it with something. You can make a simple drag mat. If you can borrow a riding lawnmower, you can make a drag mat out of a piece of old carpet and hook it behind a riding lawnmower. If you have young teenagers, you could use them as like mules, you know.
I think I'm going to be the mule.
But if you aerify it, if you fertilize it, it can be great. The problem is if you want to switch this lawn to Zoysia, which I can certainly appreciate because Zoysia is, to me, it's the Mercedes-Benz, the BMWs of all lawns. I mean, it is just a gorgeous grass. It is, in my opinion, a little bit easier as far as fertility and water management to grow a Zoysia lawn.
And
but,
cutting.
But it does have, the frequency cuts not as often. So it's got some advantages, but you better be careful because it has disadvantages as well. It's a little more susceptible to leaf spots and to patch disease in the fall and winter.
Right.
So there's some disadvantages to Zoysia. I don't want to paint it's the perfect grass for everybody, but it's probably the most perfect I could think of for the average homeowner. But if you want to convert it, what we don't want is you to spend money and then have a contaminated Zoysia lawn down the road with Bermuda. So if you want to convert it, then you're going to have to start spraying that Bermuda out on a two-week interval with Roundup and another product called Fusilade. You tank mix the two together, and you're going to have to spray about every 2 weeks. I would suggest three sprayings minimum before you go in and strip out the old Bermuda lawn and then replace it with Zoysia. And even then, all the research tells us you're not going to get more than about 95, 96% control of that Bermuda. You're still going to fight a little bit of Bermuda coming back in within a year. And there are some post-emergent chemicals to help you with that. But it's going to be – you got to do it the right way, Jerry, if you want to convert it to a Zoysia lawn. I don't want you to waste your money. You know, we don't want a phone call next May and go, hey, man, I bought this Zoysia, and I think it had Bermuda in it because half the lawn's Bermuda. And then we scratch our heads and go, well, what was it beforehand? Well, it was a Bermuda lawn. Well, what did you do? Well, I just had them scrape it off and tilled it. Well, you till it, and you don't have dead grass, but you now have living stolons and rhizomes that you're tilling. You're just spreading that. It's basically you're re-sprigging Bermuda at that point.
Okay.
So,
all right. Well, maybe I'll stick with the Bermuda. Does it help at all to top seed also or not?
Yeah, you don't want to get into any seeding if it were a sodded lawn. And the reason being, that's a hybrid 419 lawn if it were sodded. It could be Celebration, something like that. There's not much of that in the upstate of South Carolina, that Greer area. More than likely, 99% certain, it's hybrid 419. You can ask your builder, you know, who was the sod supplier, and then you can kind of matriculate it back and ask the sod supplier. Most sod suppliers, if not all of them, have, you know, if it were sodded within the last year, they should be able to tell you. If you give them a lot number in what neighborhood, if you find the sod supplier, they can probably tell you exactly what variety of sod they deliver. We keep delivery records. All of us do. But Bermuda can be a very rewarding lawn, but it does takes a little bit of elbow grease, and especially with your lawn, because I know what probably happened. They graded it out right. They put the grass down right, green side up. I mean, it's not that complicated, okay? They sodded it. It got enough water to survive it, but I can almost guarantee you if that house sat there for a while, you know, 4, 5, 6 months before you moved in, I can almost guarantee you it wasn't fertilized or anything like that. And Bermuda needs fertilizer right now.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm on a 9, I think I got a 9 application program set up with the company that's doing the fertilization.
Gotcha. And, you know, and one thing I would do, too, is ask them what those applications are. You can visit our website, CarolinaFreshFarms.com, and you will find a fertilizer program, what you should be doing if you were doing it yourself. I would compare what they're doing to what we suggest and ask some questions. Make sure they're doing the right thing. Most companies out there, lawn care companies that do fertilization and pre-emergent that I know of, they're all great companies. They do good work. They use good quality product. We just want to make sure that they're doing it at the appropriate time of year.
Right. Okay. Well, this has been very helpful. I appreciate it.
Thank you
very much.
All right. Have a great weekend.
You bet.
Bye-bye. Folks, you are listening to the Yard Pro Show. We're having a great time today, aren't we, Scott?
We are.
You know? I'm looking here. Not much going on the text line, right? We do have another phone call. We're going to get right to them because they called the first half of the show, too. So I appreciate them calling back. But I want to remind the listeners, just like Jerry, our last caller, if you have questions, whatnot, during the week, it's very simple. You can visit us at www.carolinafreshfarms.com. There you'll find a link to all of our retail locations. Great source of knowledge and information. And there's really good information there on the website as well. So we want to help you out, open up the doors. There's links there for emails. You can send pictures, all that good jazz. So without further delay, let's go to Todd in Greenville. Hello, Todd, and welcome to the Yard Pro Show.
Hey, guys. Good morning.
Appreciate you calling back.
Yeah, I've had a little snafu, so I appreciate that you guys have got time. I've got on my property line, I have three rather large cypress trees that border my property and my neighbors. On the other side of my neighbor's lawn, he had a huge Bradford pear that we actually took down a couple of weeks ago, but they completely shaded the side of the cypress trees that are on his property line. And frankly, there's no foliage on them at all. It's interesting. You can, as you look where the other tree was, where it was completely shaded, you know, there's just it's just bare branches. And then you can see where the sunlight actually hit. You can see the growth. So I obviously don't want to lose these three. They're a great border between our two property lines. So what's the best thing that I can do to try to bring back the other side of the trees that have basically been in distress here for the last couple of years?
Is there some dead limbs and whatnot on that shaded side?
You know, it's funny. I mean, I went around and I, you know, plucked a bunch of them just to see if some of them were still alive. Some of them are kind of dead. Some of them still seem to have some life in them. You know, when you break them, it's green. It's not completely dead all the way through. So it's kind of a mixed bag of both.
Gotcha. A lot of times when we get in this situation where something's been shaded for a while, a lot of times it just takes time. And the reason I asked about is there some dead or struggling limbs or whatnot on that side of the tree. What I would suggest is maybe a little bit of light pruning to get some of that old dead growth out, and make sure we're pruning that back to where we have something that seems like it's more viable stem tissue, and we should see some flushing of new growth. I think you're going to be okay. I think it's just going to take time. It's not something that's going to miraculously, you know, we're not dealing with a herbaceous type plant that just quickly explodes with growth, like a lawn or a daylily or something of that nature. We're dealing with a tree that grows at a slower pace. So I really feel like you'll be okay now that you've got more sunlight there. It's just going to take time for that to flush back out. A little bit of fertilization would help because I'm sure the plants, as most larger shrubs, if not all shrubs in most landscapes across the country, seem to get neglected with fertilizer. You know, when's the last time we really, any of us, have gone out and really fertilized our shrubbery? So some fertilizer around that tree would be of benefit as well to help push a little bit more growth.
Just like a 10-10-10, something to that effect?
Something that's more slow release. A triple 14 is kind of a common analysis over the years for nursery stock and plant material. And most of those products are 60% or more slow release. We want a good slow release fertilizer so that it holds in the soil longer, and over time with rains, it'll flush in.
Great, great. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Todd. You have a great weekend.
You too.
Bye-bye. Scott, what have we discovered? Anything? We did receive a text, and I apologize. It says, please respond to my text, R.E. Royal Zoysia Picks. I do not see any pictures here. I don't even know if we can receive them on the text line here at the
send it to my number
studio. But if you'd like to send some pictures, where should I send them, Scott?
864-580-1636.
Wow, you just put your cell phone number
all
the listeners
That's
out there.
All right.
Isn't that great? So if you're listening and you'd like to send a picture, hopefully we can get it in. If not, if you send that to Scott, I can promise you one thing with Scott. Even if we don't get it by the end of the show, he will respond and talk to you about your Royal Zoysia. Royal Zoysia, man, what a neat variety of grass.
I mean,
nothing is perfect. Every grass has an opportunity to have issues. But, man, that Royal Zoysia, it just – It is a great grass. That has really just taken off great. It's a fine-bladed Matrella. We've had it for several years now, and just a fantastic zoysia grass. What fertilizer should I be putting on my Bermuda grass? Right now, Scott, what is on the schedule?
20025
Expo. The Expo component is really neat. EXPO, extended release potassium, right?
Mm-hmm.
So what they're doing, potassium is not slow release. Can't really make it slow release unless you encapsulate it. It's kind of like nitrogen. Well, there's some nitrogen sources. You've never allowed me to go into the dissertation of nitrogen sources.
Here we go.
But there are some nitrogen sources that are naturally slow release, you know, by their composition. But with potassium, it's not. So, and potassium leaches very readily from especially sandy soils. But it's very crucial in the development and growth of cell structure and water movement more than anything in plants, okay? So it's a very crucial element to have, especially when we go into drought. But the Expo, the reason we suggest it now in Bermuda or warm season lawns, what we like about Expo is the potassium is made into the methylene urea prill. Basically, they're blended together, okay? So as that methylene urea prill begins to degrade over a period of time in your soils, it releases a little bit of potassium over time. You got a funny text, didn't you? Yeah. Yeah, Laura just said Scott gave his phone number to the entire world. That is correct. Way to go, Scott. Hopefully you'll get a lot of phone calls and a lot of leads. Scott, we're going to stay with the phone lines. We have a few minutes left in the Yard Pro Show. We're going to Gerald and Anderson. Good morning, Gerald, and welcome to the Yard Pro Show.
Thank you for taking my call. I've got a question on tomatoes, squash, and cucumbers. I've tried to grow them the past few years, and they will bloom, but the blossoms fall off all the time. Prettiest blossoms you've ever seen.
So you tomatoes, squash.
How do the plants look?
Oh, the plants look pretty good.
So,
they're the prettiest blooms you ever seen, and I've planted them in pots. I've planted them in different parts of the yard, and they do it every time. They'll bloom, and the blooms will just fall off of them.
Are we getting ample sunlight?
Yeah.
Okay.
I've done it in straight sun. I've done it in partial sun, and now I'm doing it in a little bit of shadiness. And even my tomatoes, I can grow big boys and all, and they get no bigger than a cherry tomato.
Really? Are you doing any type of fertilization or anything as a pre-plant? And here's my other question. Are you planting back into the same area like with the tomatoes? Do you plant in the same garden every year, or are you doing those in pots as well?
Do those in pots as well.
Okay. So what I would begin to wonder, if the plants look healthy, so we don't think we have a disease issue, because typically, especially with tomatoes and with squash and zucchini, you know, it's pretty evident. Squash and zucchini, you can see powdery mildew, things of that nature. The heat and humidity really gets to those plants here in the southeast. That's why I've elected, I went to the grocery store last night, I can buy yellow squash and zucchini for 99 cents a pound. I figured, hey, it's easier just to buy it at the grocery store. Now, tomato's a different thing, because I will not eat a tomato unless it comes out of a garden. I don't like these store-bought tomatoes that are picked green in Florida or wherever they're growing them for that season, and they're shipped in a semi-trailer and pumped full of ethylene gas to turn them green or red. They just don't have the flavor. There's nothing better than a homegrown tomato, straight from the vine, in my opinion. So
the only thing that I can get to grow in a tomato is a cherry. Like I said, I can grow big boys and rusters.
Yep.
They get no bigger than a cherry tomato. The only thing I can grow in the same places where I put the squash and all is peppers. I can get peppers off the vine like crazy.
I'm the same way in my garden, man. This soil in the upstate of South Carolina is absolutely perfect for growing peppers, apparently, because I can plant a pepper and not tend to it, not water it, not do anything to it, man, and I got more peppers than I know what to do with.
And it's everything from sweet bell peppers all the way up
That's
to
right.
Carolina Reapers.
That's right. They grow great around here. Tomatoes actually grow great. I think one of your problems you may want to investigate if you're getting smaller fruits on these larger varieties like the big boys, the celebrities, the things of that nature. You may want to really take a long, hard look at your pot size, because if the pot size is smaller, yet that plant wants to grow really big, that could be we're dealing with a physiological system here, and if the root mass is not large enough, you may not have enough support to really have a nice big fruiting body.
What about the same problem, though, when I plant them in the ground?
When you plant them in the ground, one of the issues I think we run into, or I know we run into in our neck of the woods, is disease. A lot of times we're planting these plants or we're planting our gardens in the same place year after year, and there's a whole host of diseases from fusarium, wilt, and blight. I mean, there's just so many things out there that can be an issue on a tomato plant. That can wreak havoc, and it's certainly going to wreak havoc not only on the plant, but that can also interfere with the size of the fruit that you're making as well. My other thoughts, too, is maybe look at your fertilization. I mean, are you trying to fertilize these plants periodically? Or
no, I just put them in the ground.
All right. Do a little bit of fertilizer.
It's in a sandy-type soil.
Yeah. If you do a little bit of fertilizer, like some Miracle-Gro or something like that, I think you may see a little bit better fruit set and a little bit bigger size. So try a little bit of fertilizer. Evaluate the size of that pot as well. You may want to step it up and go one size larger.
Okay.
All right. Thank you, Gerald. Okay. Have a great weekend and good luck gardening. Folks, you have been tuned in to the Yard Pro Show today. We really do appreciate it. If you'd like to find us during the week, it's very simple. www.carolinafreshfarms.com. Boy, that's a mouthful, Scott.
It is.
We've really enjoyed the show. We appreciate all the participation from our listeners. You can find us during the week, as I said earlier, at www.carolinafreshfarms.com. Hope you have a happy week gardening, and we'll talk to you next week.